Hello and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show with me, Robert Bounds. Last week, we took a trip to Tate Britain to see the work of the photographer Don McCullen, famed for his depiction of conflict zones all over the world. In this episode, we continue our theme of war journalism, this time through the lens of a new film called A Private War. Now, Private War tells the story of the late journalist Marie Colvin, whose groundbreaking work for the Sunday Times gave readers a glimpse into the harrowing world of warfare and the thousands of civilians affected by it globally. Colvin's work took her to Libya, Iraq, Sri Lanka, where she was blinded in one eye, and beyond. But in 2012, Colvin was killed in Syria when she was reporting from Homs. Last month, a court in Washington ruled that the Syrian government is liable for the deaths of Colvin and the French photojournalist Remy Oschlik on that fateful day. A Private War sees Rosamund Pike take up the role of Marie Colvin as it explores both her personal and professional life in the decade leading up to her death. The film also highlights her friendship with Paul Conroy, the photographer she worked with many times throughout that period and who was with her when she died. And he's played by Jamie Dornan in the film. We're going to make things a little different today. And instead of reviewing the film, as is usual, we're speaking to Paul Conroy and the film's director, Matthew Heineman.
In war zones, parents go to bed at night, not knowing if their children will see the morning. That is a measure of fear that I can never feel. But when you're covering a war, you have to go to places where you could be killed or where others are being killed. And put one foot in front of the other, no matter how afraid you are, to make that suffering part of the record.
Paul and Matthew, thank you very much for coming in this morning. Matthew, congratulations on a really wonderful film, A Tough Thing. I wanted to ask you first, is it a film about a person, a war correspondent, or is it a film about war itself?
I think probably both, right? I guess it's up to you. I think that's what I love about making films is that I hate creating sort of one-dimensional portraits of people or ideas or things, and I hope everyone takes something different away from the film. For me, it's a character study of this, you know, amazingly beautiful, courageous, complex woman. It's a, you know, sort of psychological thriller trying to understand what drives somebody to go to the most dangerous places on Earth and then the effects that that has on her. But it's about many things as well, I think.
Well, I wonder what your kind of starting tack was, because journalism is kind of under threat from all sides, and this is the sort of, this is how a lot of people see the zenith of it, the pinnacle of the profession, the bravery of it, both in print and physically as well, as the war correspondent, the foreign correspondent that finds themselves in very tricky situations and puts themselves in those tricky situations. Which were the sort of high points that you wanted to include in the film, the meaningful moments?
You know, again, I think I did not want to make a biopic. I did not want to make a cradle to grave story. The key factor in sort of determining what we showed and what we didn't show, which was quite hard because, you know, she had an amazing life, and, you know, and this could have been a 10-part series. But I think
there's a lot of source material here as well.
A lot of source material. And I think, you know, I wanted to find at least start the film. The ending was clear, but, you know, where to start it was not clear. And I think the decision to start right before Sri Lanka, which was quite, you know, a big turning point, obviously, in her life, something that traumatized her, something that obviously maimed her. The eye patch became a defining characteristic of who she was. It's something that she embraced, that she embodied. And so, yeah, that seemed like quite a logical time to start the film. And then, you know, it's an interesting film because, you know, it's not a traditionally structured film. It's really sort of an A-B structure of going to war and coming home and going to war and coming home, which isn't necessarily an easy way to structure, you know, a three-act film. But that's the experience of a war correspondent, is that of being at war and then coming home. And I think,
like the Odyssey on fast forward.
Exactly.
And then we'll do it again. Yeah. But there is that. There is that questing thing about the whole film and, of course, her life, I guess.
I was also quite interested in the effects of war. the effects of all of these images and all of this trauma that she'd witnessed, the effects that that had on her and how she carried that with her at home. I think to some degree, and Paul can obviously speak to this in a much deeper way, is to some degree, I think life on the road, life, you know, in a war zone was simpler. The stakes were higher. She felt things in such a clear way, despite how chaotic and horrible and awful the things she's witnessing were. Whereas at home, you know, she had a wonderful life. She had amazing friends. She had a great sense of humor. But I think, you know, she struggled with life at home often, both, you know, her romantic life, but also sort of comprehending what she witnessed at war.
Paul, it's a strange thing to see yourself played on the big screen. You're played by Jamie Dornan in A Private War. You're played as a sort of reasonable counterpoint. Not always reasonable, but a slightly more reasonable counterpoint.
I like the sound of that.
To your friend Marie Colvin. How did that work? You were obviously an advisor on the film. You were there for almost every day of shooting, I believe, or every day of shooting to make sure the context, the scene was set correctly and all the rest of it. How did you work with Marie? I always find that working with a photographer, the photographers ask the best questions and the writer tends to point the camera in the right direction. It's a very symbiotic relationship. Well, what was yours like?
It's strange you should say that. I mean, that is, I think our relationship worked because in the field, when we hit the ground, you know, I know photographers who've said to Marie, blah, 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 and interrupted that in mid-interview. One who shall remain nameless. They were in a command bunker in Libya and he spoke out going, he just said something during the interview. And they went outside and Marie pointed north and said, go to Sirte, which was a town 300 miles away across the desert. And she never spoke to him again. So I would never have dreamt of saying to Marie, Marie, I think you've missed something. On the same hand, she never ever turned around to me and said, I need that shot. And that was the beauty of our work. And we didn't have to be next to each other. We knew what we needed and we both went about it in our own little way. Marie would often go and... Whenever you get these wars, you know, the first thing that happens when the government falls is these committees sprout up. So you get like a week before there's a committee saying, yeah, you can go to the front line. And Marie would often have to speak to these people. And that was my worst nightmare. You know, old men sitting in a room, smoking cigarettes, drinking tea, talking about the Bowling Green Committee or whatever it was. And I would say, I'm coming along for one shot. I'll get a shot of you and all your men. You know, I need to be outside to get it. And that worked. It was like an unspoken way of working. And when you find that and you get used to it, what you do on the ground then, it doubles, triples in efficiency. She's doing one thing, I'm doing the other. And when we sit down to put the story together and the pictures, we know which pictures go, and it always worked. And that is a unique... She was tricky with photographers, trying to get them to stick with her was, you know, Sunday Times.
Well, that's addressed in the film as well, obviously. Now everyone's last distance. I like that you got the line, the best. Who are you? Are you any good as a photographer? I'm the best. I'm glad that... You can tell that Paul's an
Slightly
advisor
arsy.
On the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your name?
Paul.
I'm Marie.
I know.
So you're freelance?
Always.
Any good?
The best.
Come on.
What now?
I need a photographer. I've never found one I like. Let's see how you do.
No.
Yeah.
But it's a funny thing, for the uninitiated listening to this, you obviously want to get shots of the people that the journalist interviews, but also you want to kind of create your own photographic universe for the story to fit into. How much were you, there's a lot of you, maybe it's a filmic necessity for you and Marie to be running side by side in the movie. How does it work? How did it work in the field? Were you always side by side in your flak jackets?
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the time. Apart from when she'd gone to her committees, and I would, you know, I know I could go and get some shots that would benefit the study, but it was very much a team. We acted as a team. In Libya, we were there for a bit longer, so there was more opportunities for Marie to go and work on a piece, and I'd go with another bunch of rebels. But in Syria, we were locked in side by side because it was one of, you know, the most hostile environment you could possibly imagine. When you've got your partner there, you stick together on that kind of gig.
Matthew, you're in terms of documentary, the documentary world, you're on sort of familiar territory with the subject matter of A Private War. This is your first feature. How did you have to sort of readjust your mindset to do this? Obviously, you're casting people in a very different way to setting up interviews as you would have done with in the documentary sphere. How did you have to sort of change your working practice to do this? It's quite a big jump.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's quite different in many ways and, you know, similar in other ways.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's storytelling. And the basis of my documentaries are my relationships with my subjects. You know, my documentaries are very experiential. They're generally not with talking heads, you know, or interview-based. So it's all about following characters and developing a rapport and a relationship with my subjects. And I found that that skill in gaining their trust and breaking down barriers and allowing them to be themselves was quite transferable to working with actors.
Yeah.
You know, a huge part of that relationship with working with actors is that each of us can feel like we can make mistakes, like we can challenge each other, push each other. And, you know, that's quite a beautiful relationship. So that felt quite familiar. I think the hardest thing, honestly, for me was, you know, walking on set, having a couple hundred people staring at me, you know, when I'm used to being out.
Yeah, I was heading down that way with my question as well, because it is, that's the difference. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm used to being out in the middle of, you know, nowhere, Mexico, on my own, shooting, taking sound,
yeah,
you know, working out by myself. And so it was quite a foreign experience. And I think whether it's a $5,000 film or a $50 million film, the sort of intersection between art and commerce was quite different for me. You know, when I'm out in the middle of nowhere, I'm not making a documentary, I'm not worried about money. I'm not cognizant of, you know, if I stay for a week, is my $20 a night hotel going to make a difference? You know, with making a narrative film, every single decision has a dollar sign attached to it. And so that took a little bit getting used to for me.
Come on, let's go. No, wait!
Go, come on, come on.
What the fuck? That's the distance.
Please, listen to me next time.
Yeah, and I wonder how the pitch works for a movie like this. It's a story of a great woman, a great character. It's a war film in lots of ways, but it seems to me it's a campaigning film for the importance of journalism. So that you're on a bit of a seesaw there with it making an exciting film, but one that doesn't trample over the subtleties of the real life character which you're depicting. Did that happen in the pitch process for this movie? Did it happen every day on set? Or were you very clear on how the balance was perfected between those two things? If a balance needs to be sought between those two things, I wonder.
Yeah, I guess I never really think about things like that. It's always about the story and the character for me.
You know what I mean, though? I know that when you say we're going to do a story about the latterly Sunday Times war correspondent Marie Colvin, people go, well, how does that work? And you're like, well, it's a war film. It's got loads of exciting moments in it, but also it has a very real campaigning nature to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're making the film for the campaigning nature of it, then you're probably making it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, people go to movies to escape, to fall in love with the character, to be transported to a world that they can't otherwise visit or know or understand. And so for me, it's always about creating a compelling narrative first, and then hopefully that compelling narrative fits into the zeitgeist of a larger conversation. And fortunately or unfortunately, you know, this film couldn't be any more timely, you know, with journalism and journalists under attack, living in a world of fake news and sound bites from the country that I come from, journalists, you know, being demonized and denigrated. You know, for me, it's an homage both to Marie and to journalism and a celebration of that. But when I'm making the film, I'm not thinking about all those things. I'm thinking about, you know, how to tell the most compelling story possible and lead up to the production, you know, really researching the hell out of the story, you know, the hell out of her, gaining the trust of her friends and her colleagues to really create a nuanced, complex portrait of this, you know, amazing woman. And so my fidelity was always to be authentic as possible to both her experience into the war zones that she visited.
How did you guys work together, Matthew and Paul? You're advising on the film, as we said at the beginning, Paul. Practically, what does that mean? How does that manifest itself?
Well, I mean, I think first off, we worked for a while in England, didn't we, on the script? I came up, met Matt, and we went through the script. And it was just, it wasn't massive changes, was it? It was just them little nuances of, you know, being there and trying to offer some advice on, you know, I mean, me and Marie, you know, we had our own language, you know, and of course that's, as the script progressed, that was all dialed in. And often on set, it would be changed just to make, I guess if I think it feels real, then it's going to come across as more natural. But I think just, it's hard to define. There was no particular, you know, I was a bit unsure, advisor. It was just when Matt had questions or Jamie or Roz, we found a nice way of working on set. I think I was taking photographs as well because I had cameras and I was there, and then I was asked to be the set photographer. And I think just everybody was on set, and it was always a case of what, you get your opinion on this. So I found that natural role. I didn't know what advisor meant on a feature film. I'd never done it in my life before. I just showed up and watched, listened, and it was an incredible feeling on set. It was a bit like that journalist thing about being in the environment we were working in was quite harsh. The time, hours, everyone tired out in the desert, all trying to get a job done. You know, by the time we got to the end of the film, there was that family feel to it all. You do get in war zones, and I think I took to that. I felt something that I recognised just in the way we were working, and you know, Matt's commitment to the truth and getting it visually correct and getting it, the balance of what we were doing, getting all of that. It was like a journalistic endeavour.
Yeah.
So I didn't ever feel like I was just there to go, they didn't do that, they didn't do that. It was to add what I could to the process.
There's an assault coming, we need to go now. Now, now, now.
Stop.
What are you doing?
I gotta go back. There are 28,000 people there. No, we can't
listen
abandon.
To me! You're brilliant. I'm brave, and you've got an amazing nose for the story. But you don't have a military brain, all right?
Hey, let me go.
Hey, we will freaking die if we go back, okay?
You know, Paul was a huge, from my perspective, just not only incredibly helpful in all the details and the sort of different shades and fabrics of who she was, but also their experiences. But just, you know, on a basic level, just a huge inspiration to all of us. In a living,
keeps it very real. I'd have thought when you have one of your characters there, being generous with your time and all the rest of it.
There was this kind of funny thing about showing up on the set. You know, someone after a day or two confided in me, said like, "We were all kind of shitting ourselves that you were coming out because we didn't know if I was just going to come out and be an idiot and blah blah blah." And he said, "You know, after a day, everyone was relaxed." And I said, "Yeah, well, I'd never been on a film set on that level before." I didn't know what to expect. So I think there was about a few moments where everyone was a bit, we got over that hump. It wasn't even a hump. It was just that there was a mutual bit of like, what's this going to be like?
A few sharp intakes of breath.
And then, you know, that dissolved and it was a smooth and a wonderful experience for me.
But I think he also was, you know, just a huge inspiration, obviously, to Jamie Dornan, who plays him, but to Rosamund, to me, but to really, you know, every single person on set. And I think, as I was saying, like, you know, living, breathing reason for why we're making this film. Yeah, just such inspiration. And, you know, one of the things that I did in trying to bring my documentary ethos into this process was working with all non-actors, working with refugees from the various countries we were depicting. You know, we shot all the war zones in Jordan, but when we're depicting Iraq, you know, the women who are wailing at the mass grave, they're real Iraqi women reliving real trauma. When we're in Syria, in homes, they're real Syrian women or men.
I was amazed when I read that, actually, reliving, because they, I don't know what you can call it. There is obviously in the culture a performative aspect of grief that we know, right? But that, I mean, that was deeply moving because it had that double whammy of meaning, I suppose, that you'd cast real people that had really experienced grief. What's that like on set when you're rolling the cameras? It's a very sobering moment. I mean, obviously, dramatically it is, but it really is too. What was the atmosphere like on set at those points, Matthew?
Just incredibly heightened. You know, I honestly couldn't imagine doing it another way. I didn't know another way to do it. The whole experience of making this narrative film was one of a bunch of new experiences for me.
Yeah.
And it just was such a heightened feeling, I think, for everybody, but especially, and most importantly, for Rosamund and for Jamie and for actors. you know, they always attempt to try to get to some truth, to try to get to some reality. And, you know, that's often hard when you're on some stage in LA or wherever you are. But to be on a real location with a set that looks incredibly real, with real rubble and dirt and dust, but then real people who are shedding real tears and telling real stories, that just takes it to a whole nother level. You know, one example being the hospital in Homes, the man who brings in his young boy who ends up dying on the hospital bed. You know, I spent weeks and weeks and weeks interviewing different people to play that role, and eventually found this guy whose 2-year-old nephew was shot off his shoulders at a protest in Homes and bled out in front of him. And so the grief and the trauma that he brought into that set was almost unbearable. And at one point, Rosman walked off set and said, you know, I'm not sure what to do. I don't know if I can handle this. The lines between documentary and fiction are so blurred. And I said to her, look, this is something that I deal with on a daily basis in my documentary work, and that, you know, Marie did as well, which is you have this human instinct to want to give someone a hug or to give them space, but your job is to capture this moment. And, you know, this man wouldn't be here if he didn't want his story told.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's countless examples of that throughout the film.
Early on one of the very first days of the shoot, when we were doing the mass grave scene, that changed. It got to about 5 and the light was starting to go, and they were doing the shot where the women were throwing the dust on the head. And I was sat on a hill, and I could hear what was happening. And then all of a sudden I went, just instinct that I went, something's changed. And I ran down, and one of the women being in that situation triggered the moment. And it went very real, very quickly. You know, there was the 5 p.m. call to mosque was happening. The sun was going. And this scene unfolded. And I remember getting down to where they were shooting. And Roz and Jamie were actually quite shocked at that point because it stepped over the line.
Yeah, well, if it felt real to you.
Yeah, and I knew it, instinctively knew it. And I kind of went up to Jamie and said, like, you have to get stuck in now. This is the time. If you've been on this job for weeks, you get there, all of a sudden it's happening. And it does feel incredibly intrusive, as Matt will doubt and test, when there's that grief to step in and do it. And I think for them both to get that lesson so early in the film of what it felt like when it, you know, this was real, and Bob Richardson jumped in the grave with the camera and just caught that moment. And I think after they'd had that experience, I think it was the first or second day, they went through the whole shoot. And I think that was probably such a good thing to happen, because Roz, as much as your instinct is to put your camera down or your pen or do whatever, but that's not why you're there. And I think they got that, and that shows in the performance all the way through, that they'd had a dose of reality.
They'd had a dose.
And affected, in effect, in such a positive way, their performance.
And I think that was honestly my biggest fear, is could I achieve that reality? I filmed in mass graves.
Yeah.
I filmed in hospitals. I've been with suicidal patients. I've filmed with people dying. You know, I know what that feels like. I know what that room feels like. And so could we achieve that level of authenticity and reality on set? And I guess the answer was yeah. You know, there's so many moments where it felt genuinely moving and emotional and frightening and sad. And so that moment that Paul referenced at the mass grave, when it felt quite good, because I was like, okay, maybe we can actually do this.
And well, congratulations both on a wonderful film, Matthew Hyman and Paul Conroy. And you can see A Private War, which is out in cinemas now. This show is produced by Holly Fisher, and we'll be back at the same time next week. But until then, from me, Robert Bound, thanks for tuning in.